Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, I've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk a little about late season soybean insects. And yes, I know in some areas it's getting really late. But nevertheless, there can be bugs out there right now that can be doing serious damage to your yield and to your profits. We're going to talk about those today. If you'd like to email us here, if you've got any questions or anything you want us to talk about today, just email us at radio@agphd.com. We're going to get to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag coming up shortly. To begin with, though, we are broadcasting from the Morton studio today, and I just wanted to say with these late season soybean insects, Darren, generally speaking, now is about it for us. I mean, we're just wrapping up our last spraying on soybeans. We are spraying fungicide and foliar fertilizer, and we have enough bugs. We don't have a lot, but we have enough to justify treatment. We're going out with a bifenthrin product right now.
You know, this is going to be a part of the discussion today is, what do we get for residual out of different insecticide products? Is it more of a kill them now, or how long will it stay around afterwards? And then also, you know, thinking about any bugs that are laying eggs, when is too late? You know, I feel like we're in good shape right now. I haven't seen a lot of the adult stage of grasshoppers, for example, and there's other bugs that we're in a pretty good timing in our geography, but what are some of the things to watch for? So, yeah, when we look at these late applications, so often we're seeing growers putting in insecticides, and, you know, we talk about threshold levels, but then again, if there's half a dozen different species out in the field at some level that are all negative bugs, you think, wow, there's enough bugs out there overall. I've talked to some growers here that have said, well, I really am not seeing anything, but I've got some leaf symptomology. I see that there's something feeding on my leaves. What is it? Boy, you know, you just need to be out at a little different time. If you're out in the middle of the day, many times you don't see those defoliators out there, whereas you will in the evening or early in the morning. So you may just have to change things a little bit. It's not like anybody really thinks farming is an 8-to-5 job, but sometimes we do have to just consciously think about, you know, I better be out there at 6 in the morning if I want to see this particular bug, like cutworms, for example, or I may want to be out there at 8 o'clock in the evening to take a look. And then you see some of the things that you otherwise miss. For us right now, there's a lot of flea beetles out there, which it's been interesting. We haven't seen that as a problem bug until just the last few years here, especially the last couple of years. But just, you never know what you're going to find. Just need to get out and scout. That's the real key, Brian.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to be out there looking all the time. But, you know, it's hard, Darren, because at this point, even soybeans are getting pretty big. We've got some soybeans now that are shoulder high. All our beans are well above waist high. So, you know, and every morning it's soaking wet out there. So it's not a super fun job. Let's put it that way. You can't just go riding through your field anymore or anything else. You're going to have to walk. You're going to have to put in the time if you're going to scout these fields.
Well, and here's where digital ag can really help. We look at tools like Farmer's Edge with daily crop scouting imagery. And sometimes people say, well, I don't know if I really need that. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. Because how are you going to scout the fields? How are you going to get over all those acres in a real timely manner if you don't just hone in on some of these hot spots that are out in fields? Like soybean aphids. We're going to talk about aphids today a little bit. Think about how they get started in a field. You don't see them across the whole field. You see them in some of the tough to get to places, and you see them in really small, localized hot spots. And if you can get that, you know, from satellite imagery or you know, just some kind of maybe it's drones or whatnot too. I don't know what you've got and what technologies at your hands. It just makes such a big difference. If you realize, oh, I just looked at my Farmer's Edge imagery this morning. I see I've got a problem in that corner of that field. I'm going there first. And now you can make the most use of your time. So you don't have to spend all day out there willy-nilly running all over everywhere. Target that scouting and find these problems quicker.
All right. In addition to late season insects right now, Darren, anything else you're thinking about on the farm?
Well, here's a question that I just got on Twitter. This one's from Kevin. And Kevin says, I'm showing nitrogen deficiency in my corn, and I'm not completely finished pollinating. So wondering, will foliar feed help this year? Like something like N response,
yes.
Or will it impact my pollination negatively?
So I'm not that worried about the pollination, but by the time you get out there, your pollination is going to be mostly done. But you can put a little bit of foliar fertilizer on. Absolutely, I don't think that's going to hurt anything. I will say this though: if you need 30 pounds yet or 50 pounds yet, you're not getting that on with one shot of foliar fertilizer. So it just depends on what we're after here. As a little boost, yes. If you have a major deficiency in your crop, you're going to have to somehow get more fertilizer on another way. I mean, maybe that's through a pivot. Maybe that's with, let's say, coulters or dragging a hose or Y drops or something. And I realize your corn's probably huge, but I'm just saying at this point, if you're already showing deficiency and roughly a third of the plant's nitrogen needs still have to go into that plant yet, that could be problematic.
Yeah, you know, so often this time of year we're noticing some things out there. And, you know, back to you, where you started with the whole thing, if you've got a big issue and it's showing itself visually on the corn, you've lost some yield. You have. And you just have to change up your program for next year. Now, maybe you say, well, we've had a once-in-a-generation rainfall kind of year. Okay, maybe you're not going to make huge changes. But if you say, well, gosh, we do see a little bit of this every year, it's just a little worse this year, get the problem fixed. Because so often with farming, the cool part about this is that when we fix a problem, it might fix things for 20 or 30 years that we get the benefit out of it. So why not get after it now rather than giving it another year? Now, with this late nitrogen issue, yes, you can get some nitrogen in, help finish off this year's crop, and that's all good. But again, make that change to your fall program or your spring program and get it fixed next year for good. We're talking about late season soybean insects on today's program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Innovation is key to successful farming. Our innovative Thrive 3D application system saves you water, fuel, labor, and time. Get yours at no cost with FMC Freedom Pass. Simply commit to 3-year purchase minimums of Capture Thrive 3D insecticide and Anthemax herbicide to farm faster and with more freedom. Get more details at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass. Always read and follow label directions. Capture Thrive 3D insecticide is a restricted use pesticide. Anthemax herbicide and Capture Thrive 3D insecticide are not registered for sale or use in California.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Grow corn that pays you back for your investment. Headline Amp fungicide from BASF is the smart choice. It consistently delivers plant health and disease control benefits like increased stress tolerance. You get more yield from an antitussle application than any other fungicide, with best-in-class preventative and post-infection disease control. Grow smart with BASF and Headline Amp. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, I'm really excited about today's program. We're talking about late season soybean insects, and my oldest son is all over this. Whenever we're out in fields, he's all about the bugs. Loves looking at that even more than the plants. And he always has information for me, but I know there's so much more out there. So we've got a great entomologist with us right now. I've got Dr. Bob Wright with the University of Nebraska. Bob, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Sure.
All right, so my son tells me we need to be watching out for this bug and that bug out in soybeans. I'm curious, what are you seeing out in fields? What are you advising growers in your area to be scouting for?
Well, there's typically, as we get into August, there's more potential caterpillars and other insects that feed on leaves. We're seeing some yellow woolly bears in parts of Nebraska. We're seeing some thistle caterpillars. Not high numbers, but we're seeing them in fields. And one thing growers in Nebraska are dealing with, we've had expanding range of Japanese beetles into crops in parts of Nebraska. So we're seeing those in soybeans, or have been seeing them for a while. And then there's a variety of other caterpillars you can find in soybeans and other, and we have grasshoppers in some areas as well.
You know, when you think about the defoliators, this is something with soybeans that, I mean, we don't like seeing chewed up leaves and that type of thing. But many times, unless the population is just really extreme, I haven't noticed a big yield loss. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, it depends on the level of leaf loss. And one thing we're seeing with some insects like Japanese beetles, they tend to feed on the upper part of the canopy, and you walk into the field and it really hits you in the face, but you really need to look over the whole canopy in terms of how much leaf loss there is. And it's notoriously hard to estimate defoliation. People tend to overestimate it. But our recommendation is if there's 20% defoliation over the whole canopy in reproductive stage soybeans and the leaf-feeding insects are present, that would be a treatable level. So okay. Fields are going to vary by field by field. One other thing we're probably going to see this year, I know in parts of the upper Midwest we had some delayed planting and because of wet fields, so there may be a variety of planting dates in an area. And as we get later into August, those later planted soybean fields will be a trap crop and bring in insects from surrounding fields, so that's something to watch for.
Yeah, that's definitely an observation I made as well, that the growers who have late planted crops, man, those crops are tender and juicy and green late into the season, and they seem to attract about everything. I get a couple of specific bugs I want to talk to you about. Dectus stem borer, what should we know about this one? I seem to find some of these every year.
Yeah, they've been expanding their range into soybean areas over 20 years or so, and so they're expanding their range in a lot of areas. There's some research at Kansas State several years ago. They tried to evaluate looking at foliar insecticides to kill the adults, and a problem is that they emerge over several weeks and they lay eggs over several weeks, and even with two sprays, the Kansas State research was not finding, they didn't totally eliminate the larval damage. The main recommendations, if you have them in your area, to try to assess how many infested stems there are, and if you have a fair number, be sure to harvest those fields first because they're going to be subject to lodging if we have the right weather conditions.
Yeah, it seems like they really prefer sunflowers over everything else. I know we put a few sunflowers in for our field day every year, and if we're going to see Dectus stem borers, is that accurate that they like the sunflowers better, or is it just that they're coming up a little later?
No, that was their original host, is sunflowers and things in that family, and then certain populations have adapted to accept soybeans. I know, again, at Kansas State, they did some research planting sunflowers around the outside of a soybean field can actually reduce the infestation in soybeans because they prefer the sunflowers.
Interesting. Yeah, it is kind of neat. We plant at least a dozen different crops every year, and just watching that there's some unusual bugs that we normally wouldn't see, but we do when we plant a crop like sunflowers on our farm. All right, a couple other insects that are really piquing my interest right now. One would be these gall midge larvae that we're seeing in soybeans. I saw Iowa State recently had a published article on them. What have you seen? Because I know talking to agronomists, especially in northeast Nebraska, they say they're seeing some of these in fields.
Yeah, we've seen them periodically the last several years, and it seems like something is a little different this year. At least some of our earlier observations in Nebraska, they were associated with hail damaged fields or some other injury. And what they're seeing in Iowa and we're seeing in some parts of Nebraska is they apparently are feeding on healthy plants, not just hail damaged plants. So that's a little different. And entomologists in Nebraska and Iowa are doing a lot of work this summer to try to get a handle on this. We don't even know what species this is. We're just starting to rear out some of the immatures to get an adult to get that identified.
Yeah, our big concern obviously is this going to be an economic issue? And if it is, what are we going to do about it?
Well, what we're seeing in Nebraska, and as I understand in Iowa, is it typically starts out on field borders, and it doesn't necessarily colonize the whole field, so that's the first issue. It may not be economic if it's only damaging the field borders. So we're starting to look at that.
Yeah, even
we
if
need it, a lot more information.
Yeah. Even if it does damage the borders, it's concerning to us. I know Darren in southeast South Dakota has seen where this gall midge larvae has absolutely hurt yield, and so of course guys are asking us, all right, what can we do? So far, we haven't seen that seed treatments do anything.
Well, one of the things that farmers are trying, and I know there's some guys in Nebraska that are trying this, and certainly in South Dakota and western Iowa, with some fall treatments. You know, what would the timing be? And we really don't know enough about the bug to figure this out, because it appears they're overwintering not in an adult stage, correct?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I know we aren't either. So, you know, is there a time, and I guess we're going to talk with Bob Hooten a little bit later with FMC about bifenthrin as an option if we can possibly get the timing right, but you were talking about Decta stem borers that it appears their adult time where they're laying the eggs is over, you know, several weeks, a month, who knows, maybe a little bit more. And, well, that's impossible. You can't be out there every day doing it, and so you're going to miss some. But if we can at least reduce the numbers, that would be a good start.
Right, yeah. Again, we don't know enough to really come up with good recommendations.
Yeah, it's a challenge whenever there's something new until we learn a little bit more. Hey, let me get back to, you mentioned yellow woolly bears, thistle caterpillars, those kinds of things. And we've seen a few of those out there this year, too. You know, normally we don't have a big issue, but every once in a while we do. Are there threshold levels on them that we're looking for, or are they normally not a big problem insect?
Well, yeah, not normally. We have some outbreaks sometimes. We don't typically make recommendations based on the number of those insects. It's more the general defoliation thresholds I talked about.
Back typically, to 20% at this stage.
Right. Yeah. On the yellow woolly bears, typically I see a pattern. If we have a wet spring and wet summer, they tend to build up because they have a very broad host range on a lot of uncultivated plants in field borders. And I know we're seeing that in parts of Nebraska. We had a fair number of moths in our light traps in July in some areas, and we're starting to see they're laying eggs in soybeans and corn. But it's not widespread, but there are some areas that have some.
Yeah, a lot of insects out there to watch for in soybeans this time of year, especially with all the pods that we've got coming. We hate to lose any of our yield potential we worked so hard for. Been talking with Dr. Bob Wright down at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. Bob, thank you so much. We really appreciate having you on.
Okay, you're welcome.
We're talking about late season soybean insects on today's program. We're going to get into a little bit more of that. Also talk about some of the treatment options here coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers.
Introducing Smart Insight Daily Satellite Imagery, on-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts, available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
They don't leave nicely. When worms and aphids attack your crop, fight back with Nudrin. Nudrin is a powerful insecticide that's applied after your crop has emerged. Its quick knockdown and almost immediate control stops worms and aphids in their tracks. Learn more about Nudrin and how to protect your crops from in-season invasions. Visit us at rotamnorthamerica.com. That's rotamnorthamerica.com.
Worried about weeds? Knock down tough species more efficiently and effectively with the Enlist Weed Control System. Enlist Duo Herbicide offers a convenient blend of new 2,4-D choline and glyphosate. For use in crops with the Enlist trait, Enlist Duo features the innovative Colex-D technology to provide near-zero volatility and minimized potential for physical drift. Farmers are discovering Enlist Duo stays where it's applied. And just as important, it wilts tough weeds quickly. Learn more at Enlist.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's Dual React Control System. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Zero, zilch, zip. That's the total cases of resistance documented with Manzate ProStick. That's right, zero, zilch, zip. Not all fungicides can say this, but Manzate ProStick from UPI can. This multi-site fungicide not only controls walnut blight, it plays a critical role in delaying the development of resistance, which is why Manzate ProStick is the foundation fungicide in all walnut blight control programs. For a recommendation, contact your PCA. Always read and follow label directions.
Farmers, you put a lot of money into growing the best crops possible every year, so it only makes sense to make sure every bit of that ends up in your tank. Estes patented concaves stop rotor loss with less grain damage. Best of all, they work in all crops. No more changing concaves. Call 765-650-4131 or visit EstesPerformanceConcaves.com and get what you harvest. That's 765-650-4131.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, talking about late season soybean insects. We're really happy to have our friend Bob Hooten on. He's with FMC. And Bob, talking about late season soybean bugs, we were chatting with Dr. Bob Wright with the University of Nebraska about this gall midge larvae. And I don't know if you've seen the article that Iowa State just recently put out, but they're finding out some different things, that it's not just infected plants or damaged plants. Now we're seeing this in healthy plants as well.
Yes, actually, I visited those fields last year, about this time last year. And what I noticed was the particular gall midge, there's a gall midge that's in Japan that attacks the actual pods. But I think this one has developed to attack the base of the plant, and it goes into the base of the plant, causes a lot of necrotic tissue. Eventually that will get the disease, but I think the actual bug attacks the plant first and then the disease occurs rather than the other way around. One of the things we've been looking at, though, is trying to figure out ways to control that fly. It appears that a field that's diseased this year or has this midge in it this year, probably it's the pupa that are overwintering. You plant that field into corn. Doesn't seem to like corn, at least it didn't in the fields that was in last year. Moves across the road into the soybean field and then starts attacking from the side and starts moving out in the field. It'll move quite a distance out in the field and cut those yields, you know, to 10 or 20 bushels.
You know, when we think about this, when is our shot? When is our shot for treating those flies? I don't know if anyone's got all the answers here, Bob, but what do you think about fall treatments? Are there times in late summer, early fall we could possibly catch these guys, or is it something we have to be out in the spring?
I think this one's probably going to be a spring. What I've got the guys doing right now, and I've got several reps that are working on it, they're trying to put a like something like Hero down on the corn along the edges in the spring to try to nail some of those flies as they emerge out of the soil. We're not sure exactly when they emerge. We've got to find that out. So what you're trying to do is do two things. You're trying to either control the fly to keep it from laying eggs. So you do a barrier spray in the corn, barrier spray in the soybean so that it nails any flies that would move through the pyrethroid barrier. Then you're trying to get some systemic action up into the plant to maybe take out those larvae that are underneath the tissue. So we tried some Brigadier. We have a new product, Corrigin, from DuPont that we picked up, which is a systemic product. So we're trying some different ways of controlling this, you know, both either the larvae that when the egg hatches under the skin or for the flies themselves. But first off, the university has to figure out when do these flies emerge? Are they emerging over a long period of time? This late season, what I'm thinking is, and I surveyed all the people, one of the things people have to watch is grasshoppers. Grasshoppers are getting kind of severe, and then mites. And so we have a couple of products that work very well. If you've got mites, you're going to need to use some dimethylate and then something like a Hero product at a higher rate. Dimethylate will knock mites down, and then the bifenthrin component of the Hero will keep them contained. If you do not have mites, I would stay up at about the 6-ounce rate of Hero to keep them contained and keep them out of the field. For grasshoppers, you can nail grasshoppers pretty easily with Hero or any of our products. If you have a worm complex that you think is a problem with resistance to pyrethroids, you're going to have to spend a little more money and go over to Corrigin. It's going to cost you about another bushel in price. But that's the only thing that's going to be getting these bead army worm, fall army worm that are hitting down in the Kansas area and places like that. I don't think they're up in the South Dakota area yet. Aphids are pretty light this year. Aphids haven't been a big issue. If you're over in that Minnesota area where they think they got pyrethroid problems, you could use something like Stallion. It's got chlorpyrifos in it. Same thing, it's in lorspan. And the pyrethroid will take out all your worms, and then the chlorpyrifos would help on the aphids.
All right, lots of things that you're throwing out there. Talk to me about this one, though. What about residual control, Bob? If we put product out there, like let's just say it's a pyrethroid, how long is that going to last? Do bugs have to land on those leaves to take it? Do they have to eat it? What do they have to do? How does it work?
Yeah, it depends on the type of bug. If it's a grasshopper, they're going to eat the product, so you're going to nail grasshoppers left and right. If it's something like an aphid, and it comes into the plant, you really have needed to spray the aphid unless it's got some systemic action. It's not going to crawl around too much. An aphid's on big stilts. If it's a worm, worm's going to crawl across all that foliage and pick that chemical up through this cuticle and also eat the foliage, and it'll kill it that way. So most of these beans are getting pretty well along and established in R4 stage, R3, R2 stage. So they don't have a lot more leaves to grow. So you're treating pretty much the entire crop, so you don't have to worry about too much new growth that isn't treated. So, I mean, most of these will give you about 2 weeks, 3 weeks control.
All right. When you think about these aphids, you said we haven't seen much of an issue so far, but we all know what aphids can do. They can blow up pretty quickly. When we're seeing other bugs out there, so we see some of these defoliators out in the field, we're seeing some thistle caterpillars, some green clover worms, more Japanese beetles this year than we've seen. Does it work to say, well, I've got a few of a whole bunch of different species? Because a lot of farmers look at it that way, that, well, I've got a bunch of different things. Maybe none of them are individually at threshold levels. Is it a cumulative effect?
It is very much a cumulative effect. A lot of times they wait for aphids to get to that 250 number, and they will have lost somewhere between 5 and 10 bushels. And a lot of times it's 6 or 8 bushels. And that's very economic. So what I would do is I'd get out there and get this complex of insects, knock them down. And if you have to come back for aphids, a lot of times FMC has a program where we'll assist you on that second app if you have to come back for aphids. So what I would do is go after the main yield robbers first and try to keep that 5 to 10 bushels. You know, a lot of growers I've talked to said, you know, grandpa got 50 bushels, daddy got 50 bushels, I should get 50. No, you should probably be getting 60 or 70. And you just don't realize you've been feeding bugs all this time.
Yeah, there's plenty of food for them out there this year too, unfortunately. All right, question. When we're scouting late season in soybeans, how do you do it? Can you run a sweep net through? Is that effective, or are there some different things that you have to do depending on the bug?
It depends on the bug. For the most part, you can use a sweep net to find the caterpillars, the Japanese beetles, the grasshoppers. I like to just take get a white cardboard, and knock the leaves on it to try to find the mites. Mites are the most difficult probably to find. So use a sweep net first, see what you got, throw it into a jar, take a look and see if you got a complex of insects. And then I'd also then go along and not where you've walked, go to a different area, and especially along the edges, because they're coming in from the grassy edges where grass is drying down. Take that white board and knock it and see if you got any mites starting to develop. And then based on that, then you can determine, you know, what rate do I need and what product do I need.
Hey, Bob, let me shift gears for just one second, because we've gotten some corn questions about corn leaf aphids and also about some late season corn borer issues happening in corn. There's a number of guys that have gone away from some of the BT type products trying to save some cash, and we're seeing really a big flush of corn borers in certain areas. What can growers do at this point? Is there anything in those cases?
Yeah, it depends on the stage of the corn. At this point, it is good to protect that ear, and there's a lot of earworm coming in too. And what we found is there is some resistance starting to pop up across the way on sorghum and corn. So they've got to really watch. The corn leaf aphid a lot of times will appear because we've used a fungicide. The fungal disease normally takes them out. You need to really put an insecticide in with that fungicide when you spray that tassel program. But what I would do is I would probably, you know, take a look at how old your corn is. If you got younger corn, I would get in there and spray it and make sure to get the western bean cutworms also causing some issues. So I would get in, probably spray that younger corn. A couple of good reasons: the younger corn or the late planted corn is going to be attracted to these rootworm adults. We're getting rootworm adults all over the place. We do have a new label out there, steward for the rootworms. So
Let me throw one more comment on those rootworm adults, Bob, and then we'll have to let you run. That if we're seeing those adults, that means we had corn rootworm feeding. So utilize insecticide at planting time to get them under control for next year. Bob Hooten with FMC. Thanks so much, Bob. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Every season, you try to raise the bar to achieve your best corn yield ever. But disease can stand in the way, like gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight, anthracnose leaf blight, and southern rust. New Dallaro fungicide can stop them. Two different modes of action work on the diseases for the entire spray interval, delivering best-in-class dual mode of action residual efficacy for extended performance. It's the help you need for personal best yields. Keep raising the bar with Dallaro from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery on farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
You don't settle. You're driven. You're committed. You're a farmer. And you are relentless. Mycogen Seeds is relentless too. We won't stop. We never settle. We don't back down. We work hard and we work smart to get to know you and your farm and make sure you get the right seed on the right acres. See for yourself at Mycogen.com or talk to your local Mycogen Seeds dealer and let us prove our relentless dedication to you.
One thing growers need to succeed is freedom to choose what they put in their fields. That's why FMC Freedom Pass Agronomic Rewards make it easy and economical to pair your favorite seed brand with products proven to protect crops throughout the season. Choosing Authority brand herbicides and other proven FMC products pays more than ever before. Calculate your potential incentive at fmcagus.com/fmcfreedompass today. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides are not registered for sale or use in California.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation, and patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
Everybody, come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Now's the time where we're going to answer your questions. We got a number of emails here. I'm going to start with them in the Ag PhD mailbag time. I got one from Jason. He's up in Alberta in Canada. And he said, had a fantastic time at your Ag PhD field day. Looking forward to coming again next year. Awesome. Awesome. I didn't get a chance to say hi to you, though, I don't think, Jason, so make sure you say hi next time you're down. His question today, he said, we've got spring wheat. We've underseeded it to perennial ryegrass that we're planning to harvest as a seed crop next year. We want to try to help break down that wheat straw a little bit quicker, though, to let the perennial ryegrass grow better. What would you recommend?
Okay, so what makes it break down fat? What makes residue break down faster. Heat is important. Well, I can't do much to change the amount of heat you have. So then we start thinking about nitrogen and bacteria or fungi that can decompose residue. So there's a product we've been experimenting with now called Decomp. I don't know about that situation. That might be something you could try there. Otherwise, it's pumping more nitrogen to it over the top, not injected into the soil, but over the top. I mean, you have to be careful so you're not putting so much on that you're burning that perennial ryegrass. But anyway, that's probably the direction that I would go. It's the nitrogen, and I try a little decomp.
What about fire? What about burning residue off?
Well, why would you want to do that? Then you lose a bunch of the nutrients. That doesn't make any sense. I don't see the logic in burning unless I absolutely have to. If that's a last case resort, then yeah, I guess whatever. But I'm just saying, you got money that's going up into the air. Why?
Yeah, I agree. All right. So
here's the other challenge. So, Jason used one of my least favorite words in agriculture, right behind conservation and sustainability. We can talk about those later. I hate both those words because my objective is to improve things, not to make things the same or make things as they were 100 years ago. I couldn't care less about that. I want to make things better, the environment, everything else. But anyway, I hate the word underseeded, and here's why. Because that tells me that I'm trying to raise two crops at once. That's virtually impossible to do. So now, don't get me wrong, it can be done, but I'm saying you can't maximize production on either one of them whenever you're trying to raise two crops at once, especially two grass crops, because we know that any grass at all hurts wheat yield dramatically, and we know that any grass, any perennial grass, whatever, if it has, well, like he's talking about residue, if it has any, let's say, shading, any issues, boy, I mean, you can really hurt that stand up front. Well, you don't want to hurt the stand up front. You're going to have that out there for many years. So I wouldn't do that. I'd raise my wheat crop. Once my wheat's off, then I'd seed my perennial ryegrass. That's how I would do it. But if you're trying to get this done and make this happen, yeah, I would say I'm thinking nitrogen, I'm thinking decomp, or at least try the decomp and go from there.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jason. Really appreciate it. And again, thanks for coming to the field day too. All right. Got a question from Dave, and Dave's in Upper Michigan. He sent a soil sample for us as well.
Darren's slowing down because he is giving me all of 8 more seconds to look at the soil test that he literally just handed to me.
I know.
Okay, go ahead.
You make a big deal out of that, Brian, but it really, the only challenge is just looking at samples from a different lab. That, okay, well, where, how do they have things arranged on their
and
sample?
And what test do they use?
Yeah. All right, so here we go. Dave says, I've got a field. I've got a contract for 4 years on it. I need the hay production, and I'd like to seed mid-August with a winter rye nurse crop and be able to combine the rye next summer and have an established hay crop underneath it. Or
we literally just talked about that in the very last question.
I know.
I hate underseeding. You're not going to maximize production.
He said, or I'm willing to just cut it all as rye hay. Now, I'm looking to get this going right away. So I'm wondering a few things here. I'm in Upper Michigan. I'm wondering what kind of seed, how many pounds per acre, and also the big thing is fertility. I've got a 7.8 pH in this field on average, and I'll fertilize based on whatever you would say, and I've sent you a soil sample here as well. Okay, so we've got 40 acres. We've got one soil sample. That does always give us a little pause, Dave, that, you know, I wonder, is the whole field like that?
Right.
Are there going to be some spots that we might want to fertilize differently? So we would encourage you to break that down into smaller units, at least a five-acre grid, something like that. So maybe send eight different samples, and we might fertilize that way. But we'll go with what you got so far. You know, as a cover crop with rye, a lot of times guys are putting 20 to 50 pounds an acre out there. But if you're doing it as the whole crop, as Brian suggests, it's oftentimes a bushel per acre, maybe even two bushels per acre, depending on how thick a stand you want. And you know, as far as picking a variety for Upper Michigan, boy, I don't know. There's quite a few varieties out there and lots of seed companies that are breeding for your area. So I'd take a look at that. I know there's some companies in Wisconsin and Michigan that have got some good winter rye kind of variety. So take a look at the yield data, pick what you want there.
All right. Now, when I look at his soil test, I will just say this. When I see soils like this, I just think how unfortunate it is that it's rented ground, not owned land. Because to truly fix it, it's a long-term fix. It's going to cost some money. And by the way, I don't have all the information I need. One of the things that I would like to see on here, well, actually two things. Number one, we got a high soil pH. So I would like to see an Olson phosphorus test instead of a Bray. Olson, we believe, is a little more accurate in the high pH soils. The second thing I would like to see is how much sodium is there out there? How much salt? How much sodium? I'm concerned because when I see 7.8 pH, how did it get there in the first place? Very often it's because sodium is high, salts are high. That's a real problem for me. So I can't say that drainage is your issue because you only have about 11 CEC, your sulfur's low, your boron's low, the nitrate. Let's see, do we even have nitrate on here? I don't think we have a nitrate test either. But anyway, the leachables that I see on this test are low. So I don't know that it's drainage, but I do know this. Your magnesium percentage is really low, and that's something that's for a long-term kind of deal. And potassium is painfully low. You're at 0.8. On our farm, I'm trying to get to 7% base saturation K. You're at 0.8. It would take a lot of potassium to get that up there. And it would help your crop. So in 4 years, though, you're not going to – if let's say you even got to 4% base saturation K, are you going to be able to mine all that out of the soil and return it to 0.8% base saturation K after 4 years? Not a chance in the world. So what I'm getting at here is if it was me and I said, okay, I'm going to have a four-year lease on this, I'd go to the landlord and ask the landlord to invest some money in that ground to make it better for the long term. And I'd say, hey, I'm even willing to pay more rent. You know, not a lot of people are willing to go to their landlord and say, I would like to pay you more rent. I've done that before, and I'm not afraid to do that if the landlord is willing to fix the soil, because that's the issue that I've got here. Yeah, we're painfully low on potassium, really low on magnesium, copper's low, boron's low, so, you know, zinc's a little low, sulfur's low. So we've got a number of things to fix. That's my biggest problem I've got with the soil test that I see here.
All right. Dave also had a separate question, and I'm assuming this is for some different ground, and he sent a lime sample. Dave said, we're in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, as I mentioned before, and we've got some ground that's lower pH, and there is a local lime source that's basically made from the wastewater, from the pulp and paper making processes.
Is he going to use this on this field or on some low pH ground?
Well, I'm assuming it's for the low pH ground. I don't have another soil sample here to see how low the low soil pH is.
Yeah, real quick, this is a calcitic lime. So if his other ground is like this ground and he needs magnesium, this is not a good choice. He needs dolomitic lime that's higher in magnesium if the other ground is like this. Now, I don't have a soil test from this other ground. You're saying he wants to lime, though.
Yeah, and that's the challenge here, Dave. And I guess I just want to caution you. When we look at this lime source, so in dry pounds per ton, there's 252 pounds of calcium and 8 pounds of magnesium. So definitely it's a calcitic lime, and it has the potential to raise your pH. The other thing is, on that soil sample that you sent, I think you had something like 92% base saturation calcium. So adding more calcium would be a disaster on soils like that. So make sure you get a good complete soil analysis to know if this is the right thing to do or not. I would look for a low calcium base saturation soil. Then I would use a product like this. We'll be right back with more of your questions after this.
This is Dave Robbins reporting from what can only be described as a cornfield under attack. With me is Jim Stafford, a local corn grower. Jim, what's happening here?
Mites, banks, two-spotted and carmine, you name it. This corn is under attack.
What are the plans, if any, to deal with this serious situation?
Well, we're not going to stand for it. We're going to fight the mite.
How?
ZLSC Miticide. Just one application by Grounder Air gives long-lasting mite control. Now that field corn, popcorn, corn for seed, and corn grown for silage are all labeled, mites don't stand a chance.
But what about their eggs?
ZLSC affects mites in all stages, even eggs.
What kind of timetable are we talking about?
ZLSC reaches mites under the leaf where they feed and hide with translaminar activity. For long-lasting protection after a single application, apply ZLSC at early threshold or as a preventative treatment.
ZLSC. It lasts so mites can't. Contact your local Valent representative or Valent authorized retailer for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
White mold on soybeans is a costly problem. Andiamo fungicide from SipCam Agro is a powerful and affordable solution. Here's why. Andiamo moves rapidly throughout the plant, providing fast and lasting control. And Andiamo features a low use rate, broad disease spectrum, and a better return on investment than other fungicides. For best performance on white mold, apply Andiamo at first bloom. Learn more about Andiamo fungicide by visiting SipCamAgro.com or calling 877-898-9514.
With Preaxor Xemium brand fungicide in your soybeans, it's hard to know which comes first, disease control or plant health. Preaxor fungicide is proven to deliver both with consistent performance, so your soybean crops get plant health benefits like growth efficiency and stress tolerance, plus longer-lasting disease protection, all contributing to maximum yield potential. Grow smart with BASF and Preaxor fungicide. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, taking your agronomic questions. I'm just going to go with Miles on this one. From Miles, an observation. We're talking about soybean row spacing and population, and Miles says several years in a row over different varieties, 15-inch rows at about 125,000, 150,000 population has clearly become the leader in yield and return on investment through a very large part of the Midwest, especially the Eastern Corn Belt. Hmm. You know, Miles, I'll say this. I do think if there is no disease, no weeds, nothing.
Wait, forget about the weeds. No, I'm going to disagree with you on the weeds. I know where you're going. You're saying if there's no disease, narrow rows win.
If there's no disease, narrow rows win. If there's lots of weeds, then narrow rows win.
If there are lots of weeds, narrow rows win. Yes, I agree. Yep. I thought you said if there are no
weeds. Well, I'm just saying we could take those discussions out. But just if we didn't have a weed issue where 15s clearly get an advantage, or a disease issue where 30s clearly get an advantage, or wider rows get an advantage, what are we looking at just for yield potential? You know, I think catching as much sunlight energy as possible is important. And so for me, I like the narrower row spacing. However, on our farm, we're planting 30s on most of the ground.
Yep, we've kind of given up on the narrow rows.
Yeah,
too much disease.
White mold and disease pressure. So it just depends on what you got. Now, maybe we'll get the disease thing figured out and get it so that's never a problem for us. I don't know if we'll do that, but we're working on that. But yeah, at this point, there's just a few other factors.
Working on it, but we're not there.
Okay, now here's the other thing, Miles, that I want to point out. When it comes to soybeans and some of the genetics on the market today. So just in the past week here, I've been out looking in plots, comparing varieties, and here's what I've noticed. Many of the newer genetics are not as bushy as the beans that we used to have. Now, we used to have beans back when I was growing up that were full bush, I mean, big, wide plant types. And I was actually out with our Ag PhD producer, Mark, and Mark said, man, you know, I when I think about a soybean plant, I think about this big round plant. But here we've got some beans that are maybe more of almost a thin line kind of bean, where the branching is upright and it doesn't fill the row quite as quickly. When you've got varieties like that, they're going to benefit tremendously by going to a narrow row spacing. So just keep that in mind too. The plant architecture is going to make a difference when you're picking. But you're right. You're right, Miles. If you've got no issues with disease, hey, I'll take those 15-inch rows as well. All right, get a question here. This one is from Brad, and he said, I'm in southwest Michigan. We've got a variety of crops that we're growing, and lots of fruit and vegetable in addition to corn and soybeans, which are still dominant. I decided to grow a little sweet corn patch, and it got taller and greener than I expected, so I thought my fertilizer application must have worked out well. Now, instead of pushing out an ear at the ear leaf, another whorl is coming out, and it seems mutated for some reason. I'm not sure why. So at my place of employment, we split a bag of seed, and no one else is having this problem with their seed corn or sweet corn, just me. And we got seed out of the same bag. So half of mine is planted after the summer solstice. I wondered if that would have caused any issue just planting it during the wrong season. My other thought was spray drift from grapes that you may see in the background, which also seemed a little unlikely because I hardly ever hear of drift issues around us, despite all these different crops that are grown together. I just wanted to send you some pictures and give you a little backstory to see if you had any idea what may have happened to my sweet corn.
Hmm. Looks odd. What do you think, Darren?
I gave you all the pictures, Brian, so I...
Well, yeah, I have the pictures, but what do you think caused it?
I don't really know. Yeah, where an ear would be coming out, it appears a whole nother plant is coming out. I don't know. I mean, to me, it looks like it's some sort of virus or something. I mean, you think about something like Crazy Top, where you see that up at the tassel.
Especially when he said the seed the other people produced is fine. So that tells us that something happened in your field. Could be nutrients. I doubt that it's a bug. Could be a disease. So I'd really want to see a soil test, and maybe there's something in there, but it happened because of some kind of stress. I don't know what the stress is, but that's what's going on. Yeah, every once in a while we'll see weird plants, but not a whole patch that looks quite that odd.
No, that's a little different. Haven't exactly seen anything like that before.
But no, I'm serious. If you had a soil test, send that to us. Maybe that would give us some kind of clue. Otherwise, yeah, it's probably some disease that, here again, was on your farm or in your soil.
All right. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate the question, Brett. Okay, got one from Jordan here. And Jordan said, first of all, I want to tell you I really enjoy your show. I think you do a great job. Well, we appreciate that, Jordan. He said, my question is, what products can I safely apply with a hand sprayer to control and prevent weevils in grain bins? Now, these are two different things here, Jordan. Controlling ones that are already going in the grain versus preventing weevils from even getting started.
Okay.
He mentions, I've cleaned out all the old grain, and I'll be putting corn into the bin in a month. And I'm just curious what you would do. Okay, now, this is a little different situation. So if you're pre-filling, I mean, everything's cleaned out of the bin and it's perfect.
You mean pre-treating?
Yes, pre-treating the bin. That's going to be a little easier solution.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So I'll just tell you, on our farm, we go through this. We've actually done this on Ag PhD TV a few times, I think during our Farm Basics segment. But anyway, what we'll do is we want to make sure that we've cleaned everything out fantastically well. I mean, sweep everything down. We want all the dirt, all the, you know, old bugs, dead stuff, kernels of corn, soybeans, wheat, whatever. We want everything cleaned out of there exceptionally well. We want to get that bin all sealed up. We want all that done. You know, fix your augers, you know, any leaks, any of that kind of stuff. Get all that stuff taken care of first. Once you're fully ready for grain, then we'll go in and on the bottom, probably 6 feet around the bin and on the floor, we'll spray malathion. That's kind of what we've done over the years. What we've said here over the last couple of years, though, is maybe you might consider spraying a mixture of malathion and a pyrethroid. That way you have two different modes of action, so we can hopefully prevent some of the resistance that could potentially occur going forward. So if it's me, I'm probably doing a combination of malathion and a pyrethroid. You want to wear personal protective equipment, read the label, all that kind of stuff, and spray and get the heck out of there as fast as you can, and then seal that bin up. Now, fortunately, malathion and the pyrethroids are pretty safe to human beings, but again, read the label, follow the directions that are on there, and wear your personal protective equipment.
All right, thanks for the question, Jordan. Oh,
I will say, if there is grain and it ends up with bugs and you have to treat it with something, that's what we really worry about. And quite frankly, I don't even like to talk about it because it's so crazy dangerous.
No, I'd hire somebody.
Yep. And not even worry about it. That's just spend the money.
Hire somebody that has a fumigation license.
Yep. But you know what?
And let them do it because they're trained on the safety.
In all the years you've been around the farm, we've never, ever had that issue because we always pre-treat the bins.
All right. I get a question here. This one's from Hot Hippo. It says, I use a mulcher to break down my cover crop before doing some tillage in the fall. What do you think of that as a practice?
That's fine. I mean, it'd be just like chopping corn stalks, right? I mean, yeah, I have no issue
with
question,
that. The question now, on the cover crops, Brian, comes down to, do I terminate them in the fall? Well, do I leave them? I mean, there's a lot of different...
Yeah, but he wants to do fall tillage, okay? So if, let's say, he's going to do fall tillage, here's your choice. You can go out and mulch that first. Another way to go would be to go spray something like Gramoxone and kill it off. It's going to turn black in just a couple of days, actually in probably just a couple of hours, but in a couple of days you'd be able to go out and do tillage too. So that is another option. If you'd rather spray as opposed to do that mulching like you're talking about, you got a couple choices.
All right, thanks for the question. We really appreciate that. You know, there's so many things that are happening out on the farm. It's great for us to get opportunities to share some more information with you. One way that we're doing that now is the Ag PhD Insider Magazine. It's our new bi-monthly magazine. You'll find articles and pictures. We've got some great guest writers who are contributing. We're really excited about that as well. So you can subscribe if you are interested in receiving that information at agphdinsider.com. Brian, you know, you think about the magazine, just getting a chance to go into more depth on some of these topics is really big.
Yeah, it's awesome. So we still have our television show. We've got Ag PhD Radio here, our website, agphd.com, but Ag PhD Insider is just another way we can provide some good agronomic information for you.
Thanks for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.